everyone, and welcome back to the Your Biggest Fangirl podcast. I am one of your hosts, Victoria Malle.
And I am your other host, Kristen Chavez.
And we are beyond pumped today because we have not one, but three epic guests for you on this episode.
So today we have the Broad Strokes production team as our guests. They are the team behind some of your favorite fan films. They've done the Harry Potter prequel fan films, The Greater Good, and Severus Snape and the Marauders. They're currently working on the Great Wizarding War audio drama, which tracks the story of Voldemort's rise to power set after their films about Snape. Harry Potter isn't the only fandom that they've produced for. They've taken their sights to Gotham with the Batman films, Riddle of the Mask and Truth of the Mask. So we're really excited to have Justin Zoghri and Garrett Swackhauser and Kevin Allen on to discuss their inspirations and process creating audiovisual transformative works, especially in the wake of the newest Fantastic Beasts film, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Woo! Yay! So excited about that, right?
Yes.
I'm so stoked for it.
Justin is the writer and director of all of the productions. He and Garrett write the Great Wizarding War audio drama, and they're also the co-hosts of the podcast Story Builders. You'll also recognize Garrett as James Potter in Snape and the Marauders, and Kevin plays Sirius Black in The Great Wizarding War and Snape and the Marauders.
Thank you for having us on. We're really happy to
be here. Yeah, we're super excited.
Yay! Awesome. So we wanted to ask you guys to start off, how did you each become fans of Harry Potter?
That's a great question.
All right, on three. One, two, three. So theme I got park. Into Harry Potter
when I was invited to a theme park when I left Universal.
I think Kevin has the most interesting story.
We'll start with me because I think it's like the saddest. And I didn't come into Harry Potter until I was like an adult. I had worked at Universal Studios Orlando for 7 some years, I think. And I left before the Wizarding World opened. So I was coming back to visit, and one of my friends who was still there, he was like, have you seen the Wizarding World yet? JW, I always have to shout him out and thank him for this, because he led me into Diagon Alley, and then I was just remember standing in the middle of the alley and being like, I get it now. He convinced me I had to buy a wand, so we went and got saw, like, okay, I'll find out what my wand looks like. I'm not going to buy it, but I'm going to find out. And I loved it, and so I bought it. And then the rest of the day, I was like dressing up in all the swag in the different clothing shops and was like getting my photo with the banners from the houses. I decided I was a Ravenclaw. So I was dressed up in Ravenclaw gear the whole day. And I was like, okay, I have to go home and read the books. And so I came back to Hollywood and I started reading them.
So I got into Harry Potter, like got really into it once I read The Goblet of Fire. And Goblet of Fire came out around the same time as the first movie. There was an enormous amount of world building in the fourth book that I really loved. So that's when I got really obsessed and just read the books as soon as they came out, and loved the movies. And I was actually really impressed with how most of the movies were just really good adaptations of the books. And I just got really excited to see this brand new franchise like pop up, that I could really, really get into. Like with my first love was, as far as things are geeky, was Star Trek. But that had existed for decades. But now I could, with Harry Potter, it's something that I feel like I could claim as something that came up during my lifetime. So that's why I really latched on to Harry Potter.
I love that story. That's awesome. I grew up with Harry Potter. I was the same age as Harry in the books. And I remember being read by my librarian, Jin Creer. She read the first Harry Potter book, and I thought it was so cool. So my mom and I would actually sit down and read it together. As they would come out, it was kind of became this tradition in my family. We would go to Barnes & Noble at midnight, we'd get the book, and then we would read it, each switching off a chapter until we finished it, and then we would get the Jim Dale audio version, and then we would listen to Jim Dale read it right afterwards. And we did that for all of the books, all the way up until I was in high school. And it's just, that's just how I got into it. And it's just, it was such an, like, I think is some of the magic of Harry Potter is that it brings people together.
Yeah. I love hearing about how people get into it. And thank you, Kevin, for sharing your Hogwarts house.
Oh, so that's not actually my house.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to be Ravenclaw. Oh. I think Ravenclaw is awesome. I love that you have to answer a riddle to get in your house. But I took the test, or I took a version of the test, and it came up like overwhelmingly Hufflepuff. And I was like, are you kidding me? Hufflepuff? What? I got the Wonder Bread house? But all my friends were like, Kevin, you're the most Hufflepuff who's ever been. And I finally like saw the error of my ways. I'm a Hufflepuff.
You so are a Hufflepuff.
What about you, Justin and Garrett?
I thought I was Ravenclaw too, growing up. And then the first Pottermore test I took, Gryffindor. Second Pottermore test I took when everything was revamped, Gryffindor again. So, I mean, like, it makes sense because Gryffindors are known for leadership qualities and, you know, taking risks and being reckless. And I think filmmakers have to be all those things in order to get what they want done. So, yeah, Gryffindor.
Yep, I'm a Gryffindor. I've taken the test a couple times, and I'm squarely stuck as a Gryffindor. My girlfriend thinks I'm a Ravenclaw. She, like, is all about me being a Ravenclaw. But at the end of the day, I'm a Gryffindor.
Obviously, you three all have such an amazing rapport. How did your collaboration begin? Did it start with the Harry Potter fan films?
Yeah, they did. I cast these guys out of the blue off of LA casting, like you do with people. You know, a lot of fan films, they bring on their friends to play characters, and because they see fan films as, like, you know, a fun romp that they can have some fun in. Yeah, and I was like, no, I'm going to make this taken very, very seriously. So, and I made sure that when they went through the callbacks that I could sense the chemistry. And their chemistry was apparent within, like, 30 seconds. It was really, really up. And while we were getting ready for production, I just made sure that we did a lot of rehearsal and they hung out all the time, so that they would, you know, just create this rapport with each other that would last. And because I felt that's what the Marauders were. And these guys are just really great people. So I just, honestly, I just wanted to keep hanging out with them. That's kind of part of the reason why the Great Wizarding War exists, so I could just keep working with them.
Yeah, I don't think it would if we didn't, like, keep going on tour together and,
totally,
like, going on these trips to conventions and wanting to, like, basically finding excuses to go hang out.
It was awesome, man.
I think your friendship all just really comes out on all of the screens, so, and in this podcast, so it's amazing.
Oh, yay.
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 What was your inspiration to fill in the gaps of the Harry Potter saga with all three of these prequels?
Honestly, creating these films was career-driven. I knew that making shorts and putting them in festivals was a long shot at best to get noticed by Hollywood. So I know fan films were starting to really get noticed. I was like, I'm going to do fan films too. What should I do? And I was noticing that Star Trek and Star Wars was just overly saturated in fan films. And I noticed Harry Potter was not. I just looked for stories that were inspiring me, because I know I'm good at drama, and I was reading The Deathly Hallows again, and Aberforth Dumbledore started talking about how he lost his sister, and I was like, it's a three-way duel, and someone fired the killing curse, and no one is quite sure who did it. And I was like, that's perfect. It's got drama, it's got sibling rivalry, it's got this relationship between Albus and Gellert that isn't meant to be, and then it's got the tragedy of the loss of Ariana. I'm like, that's the perfect storm of, as far as storytelling goes. So that's what I picked. And then once I got the attention and the fan base that, you know, justified making another Harry Potter movie, I actually asked the fans what they wanted to see. And I was interested in either telling a story about the Marauders or telling a story about Voldemort. It was overwhelmingly the Marauders. And Snape's my second favorite character. And I was like, then I'm just going to tell a story about Snape and the Marauders. And I tried to come up with a more clever title than Severus Snape and the Marauders, but didn't really work out. So
it fits the Harry Potter format. Harry, lead character and the something that happens this year.
Right.
You know. So.
I mean, yeah, you're sticking with the title convention.
True.
That Ms. True. Rowling herself put forth. You know, we're a part of the reason we're so excited to have you guys on is that we've spoken about transformative works before on the podcast, but primarily fan fiction and fan art. So we wanted to know, what were some of the challenges you encountered when producing these films and these audiovisual transformative works? Both Harry Potter and Batman are very protected Warner Brothers properties. So yeah. How did you navigate realizing the film with the legal challenges? And actually, have you guys actually had any interaction with any of the creative forces behind Harry Potter, like the producers, directors, Joe Rowling? Is she on speed dial? Can you give her a microphone?
God, if Joe Rowling was on speed dial.
Whew. So many things would be different. Yeah. I had one more contact in my phone for one thing.
So Warner Brothers is actually pretty chill about how they let people cover their content. What they care about is if you raise money or make money. So Greater Good was out of my own pocket. It was like $2,000. It was very little money. Severus Snape and the Marauders, we raised about $24,000. And then put another six of my own into the movie to get it done. And the reason why I didn't have another six, it came out of my pocket instead of a fundraiser, is because I got a call about a month after the Kickstarter was successful for Snape and the Marauders from Warner Brothers Legal. And they were very nice. They're like, first of all, Happy New Year. Second of all, we don't like that you raise money, but you already got the money. It's already in your pocket. So we're not going to like create a fuss and try to get you to stop. And you can go ahead and make the movie, but we have to ask you not to raise more. And you're not paying anybody and you're not making any money off of this, right? I'm like, oh yeah, of course not.
Yeah, and they said like, we couldn't sell merchandise. We had to change the logo and make it public.
Can't sell merchandise. And we had to change the logo, which was a good thing.
Yes. Yeah,
Change of the logo made it so our film stood out as more of its own thing.
But like not selling merch and making it available to the public, that was on the plan already.
Yeah.
Basically, we just heeded their rules, and we found out this is what they do with other people. Basically, they're pretty chill about it, but not everyone's that way. So, again, Batman's Warner Brothers, and I had no knowledge of what their policies were going in when I did this. So it's not like I chose Warner Brothers things because I knew that they were more chill than others. But as I came to understand, some places have stricter policies than others, while some just don't have policies. Like, you can get away with a Japanese anime fan film pretty easily. A lot of people do that. At least it used to be the case. Now it's not so much. So yeah, that's been our experience.
Cool. I have a quick question for the two actors. What was it like playing these very, very well-known characters?
It was amazing and very, very stressful. Because it's a beloved character, and not just beloved by other fans, but beloved by myself, you know, and so I don't want to let anybody down. Definitely don't want to let the fans down, and I don't want to screw it up either, because I love this guy, and I'm being given the chance to play Sirius Black, the character when I first learned about him, I was like, that guy, that's the one I want to be. And here I am getting to fulfill that dream, but I want to do it right, obviously. I studied and consulted and tried to do as much as I could to just absorb the legacy of this character and get a feel for how the fans interpret him to fill in any gaps I might have, so that when I'm done at the end of the film, people can go, yeah, that was him. Like, that's Sirius Black. I don't want people to go, oh, that's someone playing Sirius. I want them to enjoy the film without thinking that it's a film, that it's this fan project. I want them to just experience the story of it with the characters. And so I got to meet what's in their head so that they're not taken out of that experience.
Yeah. It's interesting because James is only sort of mentioned cursorily in the books, the original books, not on the Cursed Child really, but like he comes in like a couple of times, but that's really it. So, and that's sort of James after he, you know, is with Lily and like has a kid and you know, I kind of wanted to take a look at James as how he was serving the story in Justin's script that he wrote. And the way that I built James was looking at the people he surrounded himself with and then the actions that he takes for those people, and then trying to match that with who I am as a person and how that kind of vibes with me. So a lot of things that I decided about James, I got from like how he befriended Peter, how he befriended Sirius and Remus. What does he see in each of these people that he has in himself? So I sort of use that base to then decide what he does in the film and why he does it. So I kind of built it like I would build any other character, really. And when he would talk about things like school and the map, then I was able to use my knowledge of like Harry Potter and my fun and like get into the imagination of that, which is also really fun, and just sort of flavor it the right way.
Cool.
And actually, you guys mentioned The Cursed Child, and of course we brought up the Fantastic Beasts series. So of course, the wizarding world of Harry Potter has really grown and probably has no sign of stopping anytime soon.
Which is fantastic.
I'm personally excited.
I was having this conversation literally just the other day, how I think that JK is writing more, because she wrote Fantastic Beasts.
She's writing the screenplays, yeah.
And I love that, because the first Fantastic Beasts, I had like zero expectations. Watching it, I was very like, oh, this is really good. But now I can kind of tell, at least in the trailer for Fantastic Beasts 2, she is now using this as her platform to write us new stories.
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
I totally agree.
So what? How do you feel as fans? Like, do you, and contributing to fan works and everything like that, like, do you have any apprehension about any creative overlap with might be coming?
I was confident that JK was not going to cover the Marauders. She said over and over again that she's just not interested in that story. And I understand why. But I guess the only things that I would be worried about is if we came up with information in the radio play that if she decided to write a new essay on Pottermore. We got lucky and had some new advantages when the History of the Potters came out.
Yeah.
We had some information about Fleamont Euphemia and, you know, Fleamont's business that opened up a lot of information about the personalities of both James's parents and James himself that we could take advantage of. It created great moments of character development that I could play with in the radio play.
Yeah. Writing The Great Wizarding War is a fun balancing act because we have to extrapolate things like the inside of St. Mungo's mm-hmm. and make that a livable environment for the people who are enjoying the audio drama. And it's really fun to go in and do research on healers and what healers do and what they use and like what sounds would they make, because you're not using instruments to cut people open, you're using spells. So it's like when the canon changes, we really have to be on our toes. And I love it because I think that JK is a very logical writer and she doesn't do things frivolously. Like every decision she makes sense on some level.
I think she writes books like sci-fi writers do. The world that is built is so detailed and just built on a foundation of logic. And also, I just love the idea that somewhere in the Scottish Highlands, that castle does exist and is teaching wizards right now.
As a fan, what's so great about the world that she's created is it all these things, like every time she puts out new material, and it's not like, oh, it's this thing that we have to adhere to. It's just more blocks in the toolbox.
Yeah, it's
like,
more Lego blocks.
More blocks to play with. Yeah. The sandbox is growing, but she keeps filling it in with new pieces, and they all fit together however you want. You can bring in your own stuff. And what's really cool is not only has JK and Warner Brothers and all the official powers that be put out books and then adapted movies, now original movies and a theater piece, and
essays,
lectures and all the stuff online.
Is television.
Yeah. That's the only,
which we would love parks. To do, they've by the way, if someone's parks. Listening at Warner Brothers,
like there's something for everyone. Right. Everyone can play in this box. Anyone who's, if you're a theater kid or you're like me and have a huge theme park background and that's what you're into, like, there's a way to get into Harry Potter and be immersed in that. And as a result, we've got people now doing radio plays and original theater and adaptions of stage plays into more stage plays. Like, it's just everyone's coming up with their own way to do stuff. I have a cookbook with an original recipe for butterbeer based on a Tudor recipe that this person wanted to do their version of butterbeer. And it's just as valid. It is great. It's great that we all can be in this world, however we wish to play.
It's so big that people can find what they like, or, you know, if they don't like it, they don't have to engage, and that's fine. And as of this recording, it's actually about a month before The Crimes of Grindelwald comes out. Leading up to that, how do you guys feel about that film? Are you excited? Is there anything that you're hoping to see?
I'm so excited! I love it. I love getting to see a new country's take on the Wizarding World.
Yep.
Or the Wizarding World's take on a new country, however you want to word that.
It'd be great to see how Paris sees the Wizarding World. And when she came out with the countries that have schools, there's one in Africa, there's one in Japan. I would love to see the Japanese Wizarding School.
Awesome.
And I really want to see Ilvermorny, too. I know that we're going to see Ilvermorny. I think she said it's going to be in the third movie. But honestly,
are you not excited?
I'm extraordinarily excited.
Okay.
I'm just, you know, the controversy around Johnny Depp makes it difficult because I really am interested in Grindelwald.
Yeah.
I'm interested in Johnny Depp's take on Grindelwald, but I'm also interested in how J.K. Rowling handles that character.
And like how he's different than Voldemort, but he's similar. Like, that's going to be a fun new type of villain. Everybody says that Voldemort is like the Hitler of the whatever because he did all these horrible things. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Grindelwald's got the charisma.
But his motivations were far more black and white and far more simplified, while I think Grindelwald's is a little bit more complicated. You can almost understand his point of view.
Which is scary.
Yeah, that's the scariest part. Yeah. And that's what makes me the most interested in him.
Like, young Dumbledore, I'm so excited.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, the fact that he does, like, sleight of hand, like, regular Muggle magic, but also normal magic to give him the business card in the beginning of the trailer.
Just his one little line in the trailer where he's fully revealed, where he just kind of has his face of just like, I don't have to listen to you. And he has his little charm. He has a little wink. And I'm like, that's Dumbledore. I am so excited.
All right, sorry.
Plus, I'm cannot wait. And I'm going to have to wait like 8 years for this, is the final battle between Dumbledore and Grindelwald. And it's considered to be the greatest duel of all time, according to wizard historians. And I'm like, what is that going to be like? Ugh, I can't wait.
Yay. Okay, before we'd like totally just all the wheels come off the truck and we fall into a vortex of Harry Potter, like, just squeeing, which I'm totally all for. But I do think you guys have very valuable insights to give, because your fan-made films are so well done. And the podcast audio drama is so well done. So what advice do you guys have to other fans who are super inspired to create their own transformative works?
I gotta say that it is the biggest compliment in the world when other filmmakers contacted me and let me know that they were making their own Harry Potter fan films after they saw mine. So the biggest one is Origins of the Air. He said that was a direct inspiration from Snape and the Marauders, and that was huge.
Wow.
Yeah,
I knew about Son of the Moon, but I didn't know that one.
Son of the Moon too. Yeah, that was a direct inspiration. I think that our films just kind of opened the doors to people saying, oh, it's possible to make a high quality Harry Potter fan film.
So really go for it is kind of the first step. Really easy to shoot down big ideas, especially your own, but try. Honest to God, just try it first and see how far you get with it.
Nothing great will come easy. Like, it was incredibly hard to get Severus Snape and the Marauders done.
Took two campaigns.
The first campaign failed. The second campaign succeeded.
It rained heavily. The only time in LA it ever rains, like, on our shooting weekend.
Yep. And, like, find a story that really you feel something for. That's kind of the main thing that I think is the most important is when it comes to telling a story, is like find something that your heart can get behind.
Yeah, and I think when I signed on for Severus Snape and the Marauders and actually got a chance to read the script, what was more exciting for me wasn't that it was a Harry Potter film. Yes, that was very exciting. It was the reason that I clicked on the LA casting link in the first place. But what was really exciting is that it was a good story. It was a story about people trying to figure out what they're going to do when they graduate from school, trying to figure out where they want their life to go. That was a story that made sense with me, and it was something that I had gone through, and I got it, and I said I thought that that was a story that people needed to see. So if you're going to make a fan film, remember what draws you to it in the first place, and at the end of the day, make sure that you're telling a story. A story that has nothing to do with the fact that it's in this sort of universe.
Right.
It's a solid story that is something that you want to tell other people.
Everything is character and story first, and then you just get to pick what universe you want these characters to exist in or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
After you've convinced yourself that you should really do it and you've got a good story, I think what set our film apart more than anything, like everything you guys have said is completely valid, but our film is very much the greater than the sum of its parts kind of thing. Justin managed to cast all Harry Potter fans who were passionate about the project. He got a really talented crew who all wanted to do their best work for the sake of the work. It was a combination of people who were just, they're passionate about Harry Potter and want to be a part of the project, and that they are just passionate about their work and want to do their best stuff.
So don't sell yourself short. Do the best work you can do, and you attract people who want to do the best work they can do for the sake of the work.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's the most important.
That's so fantastic, because a recurring theme or motif that we found doing this podcast is marrying passion and profession, and it totally feels like you guys have really struck that balance.
Totally. That's one of the reasons also why I didn't cast friends, why I wanted to find the right people and go through the casting process, because I wanted to find people... It's great if they're Harry Potter fans. It's like the icing on the cake, but the body of the cake needs to be that they're really good actors who can dig into the character and understand their motivations and play that off with the type of subtlety and nuance that professional actors have. That's the two most important responsibilities of a director, is to make sure that you're connected to a really good story, whether you create it or not, and cast really well.
Yeah.
Now we have a different kind of flavor or sort of questions for you guys. It's time for our fandom Would You Rather game.
Fantastic.
Yes, I've been practicing all week.
So our first one is, would you rather watch your ship be realized in canon, but you can never make a fan film about them? Or would you rather make a fan film that perfectly showcases their love, but you never get to see them together in canon?
The former, for sure. Because it's canon.
Says the director of fan films. Very interesting.
Canon's canon. Like, our films are not canon, and that's okay. We do our best to remain within canon, but if some people say, this is not the way Snape is, this is not the way James is, which happened a lot, then I'm like, that's your choice. And maybe I was wrong, but this is the way I interpret it. But if J.K. Rowling comes out and says, Severus Snape and the Marauders was great, but James would never act that way, I'd be like, the queen just spoke.
Yep, that's the way that it is, you know, and you just gotta roll those punches. I like living in this mystery of, like, if you ship something and it's never really comes to fruition, like, Wolfsar is not actually canon, but it's just a funny thing to think of when you read the books again. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that, so I would probably go with the second choice.
To me, the question you posed is, would I rather be validated for my understanding of characters, or would I rather have the glory of being like, I figured this out first? And I think I'd rather have the validation of being like, yeah, I know these characters so well that of course they would ship, and of course it's real, like official.
Gotcha. So would you rather see an alternate universe where Harry Potter is a squib, or an AU where he becomes a dark wizard?
He would just, you know, live a normal life. He would probably, like, you know, live in like a suburb like they did at Privet Drive, and that would be that, you know. It would be very like Martin Freeman takes suburbia, is what I would imagine, is Harry Potter as a squib. So I would be more interested in seeing him be a dark wizard.
Oh, okay. I'm going to say I'd rather see him be a squib, because if you do the story of him as a squib, it's like the kid's already got a lot going against him. And I feel like at that point, if you send him to wizard school and he can't do magic, like, you're just beating him down. You're just kicking a kid while he's down, story wise. But if the story was him, like, overcoming that and still being able to defeat Voldemort, then it becomes a really powerful overcoming adversity story, and I think that'd be really cool. Whereas the other option of him turning into a dark wizard, then it becomes a tale where it's more about the choices you make define who you are. It's not so much about your circumstance. It's about you.
Right.
It'd be interesting and entertaining, but I don't think it's as important of a story.
So when you say Harry Potter becomes a dark wizard, it makes me think about how he's part of a little bit of a dynasty. He has a bit of a prophecy to his name. And if I were going to have him be a bad guy, then I'd want him to have a redemption. So I can't help but think about Harry Potter as very similar to Kylo Ren in that situation. Kylo is part of a line of Skywalkers, and he had so much pressure on him that he just couldn't take it anymore, and he felt betrayed by the fact that his parents weren't really there for him.
And, you know, Luke tried to kill him.
I know that Kylo is going to have a redemption. He's probably going to die, and that's probably similar to what Harry's story would be, is that he turns to the dark side and then does some pretty terrible things, it's and then Snape's finds story. A redemption. Yeah, Harry Potter would be, if he were a bad wizard, would basically be Snape's overall arc.
I want to change my answer listening to the best talk.
Right.
I want to see Harry Potter as a squib using some MacGyver-like intelligence to defeat
That's
Voldemort.
Another thing. I was so bummed there wasn't more Muggle influence from Harry.
He shoots Voldemort in the face, and he's like, game over! I win!
I love that you brought up Star Wars, because it ties into our next question.
Oh, does it?
Wow. It's perfect. If an evil supervillain were to take over the world, would you rather have to take down Lord Voldemort or Emperor Palpatine?
Oh, man. They're basically the same person.
They're both really good about manipulating powerful institutions and governments to bend in their will.
Yep.
They're both scary AF.
Yep.
and they've got lightning powers, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
That's true. They both have mind control. They yep. both have followers.
Lots of followers.
Oh, man. Real
That's a really tough question. So Voldemort, let's be real. Voldemort succeeded in taking over the Ministry briefly, maybe twice, but he could never take over a school of adolescents. He could never pull it off. While the Emperor took over a whole galaxy and had the prophesized world's strongest Jedi in existence on his side. So he had a lot more going for him as far as damage done.
Agreed. I feel like Voldemort has more of a problem with his pride, and I think Voldemort's a little more rash than Palpatine.
Yeah.
You know, like Voldemort hears about a prophecy, then goes and tries to murder these children, and like, because he's not thinking clearly enough, he kills himself almost.
Palpatine also was under the veneer of a good guy for a long time.
Very much longer than Voldemort.
And kind of stayed that way.
I think that's what's scarier about him.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to have to go with Palpatine. I'd rather have to take him down.
You'd rather have to take down a harder villain to take down?
Yeah, because he's doing one more damage.
Ooh.
Oh, you want to save a bigger day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah,
I see what you're saying.
He's a much bigger fish.
I was saying, like, if one had to come down.
Yeah, I was like, what would be easier?
Oh, what would be easier?
I'd rather take down the guy, you just have to throw down a shaft.
We must all make a choice between what is right and what is easy.
It's true. You do just have to throw him down like a space
shaft. Voldemort, you have to track down seven mystical objects that are really hard to find and kill them in like almost near impossible ways.
They were both destroyed by love.
Yep. Pretty much.
Classic.
That was my way of avoiding the answer, by the way.
Way to go.
Not answering that question.
No, I think you answered Palpatine because all you have to do is throw him down an elevator shaft.
Okay. I think we solved it. We solved the question. Would you rather watch a film series about your favorite comic book character but have to wait 5 years between each film? Or would you rather see a TV series that's set in your favorite character's universe, but they're barely in it? They're maybe in like an episode here and there.
Oh man. Ouch. Oh, I think I'm actually a fan of savoring stuff. Like, I don't binge a lot of shows I really like. Like, every time a new Netflix superhero show comes out, I try to like watch two episodes at a time at most.
What's wrong with you?
Because I want to savor. I hate burning through something I love and being like, well, now I have to wait. So like, yeah, I know it have to, you said 5 years though?
5 years? Save that for 5 years, bucko.
Oh, man.
The problem I have is that when we don't have to be... We can just get up and go to the movie theater to watch the movie and then come back and watch more Office versus sitting at home being like, we really should get started on The Punisher Season 1.
That's true.
But The Office is right there.
And it's so funny.
No, I got it. Like, because... Okay, so the
That's
Netflix...
not an answer.
The Netflix superhero shows are so good that I don't... Like, a lot of TV I watch while I'm doing stuff, it's in the background. I'm half paying attention to it, but the Netflix ones are so good. I wait till like all my roommates are asleep and it's dark out and it's just me and the story.
Mm. Oh yeah.
So
like Haunting on Hill House.
I'd rather savor the experience over a longer period of time at more of my convenience.
All right. Let me.
Gotcha. What about you, Garrett?
Oh, it hurts. This question is hard.
That's why they're fun.
Okay. One of the biggest things that has always upset me is that Firefly was canceled. I hated that Firefly was canceled because I loved living in their universe.
Power to the people. We got a whole movie out of it.
We did, which is what I love. So my question I'm asking myself is, would I want to watch the Firefly series if Serenity never came out? Would I want to watch the Firefly series if it just focused on, like, River and the Doctor? I wouldn't.
And Mal was barely in it.
I wouldn't, because Malcolm Reynolds is the reason I watch that show. So I would rather wait 5 years between a Firefly film and watch Mal go through more adventures with his team than sit and watch Firefly without him in it.
That's a really good way to put that.
Hurt a lot.
One last question for you guys. Would you rather live in the Wizarding World during the Fantastic Beasts period or during Harry Potter's tenure at Hogwarts?
Well, it's a question of the 20s or the 90s.
Okay, so here's the thing, though. If it were the Fantastic Beasts period, it depends on where you're living. Because there wasn't a lot going on in Britain. Grindelwald stayed away from Britain. He was mostly taking over Europe.
Let's say where the stories are set. Like, you're living in England during the 90s, or you're in New York during the 20s.
Good question, because we don't know what's going to happen yet.
Yeah.
We don't know how much damage Grindelwald does.
In World War II, probably.
I wonder what they're going
to
do there.
What combusted to make World War II happen was Europe, where Grindelwald is.
It's true.
World War I and II.
Yeah.
The thing
so I don't think I'd want to live through two world wars.
Yeah, probably Harry Potter 90s.
And so here's the thing. You guys are still you're bringing up like stuff in the Muggle history. I'm trying to think about what it was like for the wizarding community. And so either you're living in a really scary, oppressive time in the 90s where like Death Eaters are taking over, people are scared, businesses are closing, like everything is in the community is going to hell, and it's spreading out. It's so bad it's spreading out into the other communities with the Muggle world. Or do you live in the 20s where things haven't gone to hell, but it's still like an era of government oppression? Like, it's not so bad. It's not the end of days, but there, at least Makuza in the 20s was really strict about magical use and magical social life and restrictions. And
but I feel like
I think booze was still illegal. And
I feel like once all five movies are over, then the answer might be different.
It's definitely going to be different.
I mean, I'm going to choose the 90s because I feel like you, as a personal wizard yourself, if you wanted to, you could go off and do your own thing and no one would really bother you because everything's falling apart. And in Makuza, since they're so oppressive with their rules, if you wanted to go and do your own thing, you'd have like 9 years of paperwork to do and like no one would ever let you do it anyways.
Right.
So it's much more out of your control, so to speak.
And you know what? And something you mentioned earlier with Grindelwald, is scarier because it's not as black and white.
Yeah.
Right. And you might find yourself agreeing with some of the things he says. It's easy to look at a man in a mask face and go, I can't be behind whatever you say because you're too creepy. But Grindelwald's the handsome, charming type.
And that's freaking terrifying.
It's scary.
So yeah, that's three. So that's
films are kind of, we're all 90s kids.
Yeah. Gotcha.
I got dark.
Thank you so much for all of your insights with this. Like, I don't think we've had like such a insightful and deep discussion on each of these questions. So thank you so much.
That's an awesome compliment. Thank you.
Where can we find all of you and Broadstrokes Productions and support your work?
You can find all social media through Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, Broadstrokes Pro. We have a website, broadstrokesproductions.com, but all our social media is under the same name, Broadstrokes Pro. Can find me at Jay Zagri, JZAGRI, Twitter and Instagram.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Gshwei, GSCHWEI. You'll see lots of pictures of my cute dog. And Story Builders Podcast is on YouTube and also goes down on Broadstrokes Pro as well. They promote it.
I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/KevinAllenFace. Kevin Allen Face. I'm on Twitter, Kevin Allen Says. I'm on Instagram, Kevin Allen Graham.
And if you're not subscribed to us already, please subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, wherever you can find your favorite podcasts. And if you're enjoying this episode, please leave us a rating or review or send us a note on our social media channels. We are at YBFG Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and on Tumblr at yourbiggestfangirl.tumblr.com.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you guys so much. This was way too much fun. And I'm just in like a Harry Potter fan coma, honestly.
Good. I'm glad you had fun.
Yeah.
Our theme song is The California Lullaby Instrumental by Josh Woodward, used under Creative Commons Attributions 4.0 International License.